that we listen to these voices right now when it comes to like Black Lives Matter, defund the police. We really need health care, we need housing, we need education, and we need to keep families together when it comes to the units unifying communities and individuals. When you affect a Black woman, you affect the family, and you affect the family, and you affect the community. And I really feel that Harris and Biden hopefully can listen to these communities and realize this is important right now, especially during a crisis like this with COVID and economic, that they listen to this basic policies instead of sci-fi weapons or kinds of stuff, this housing, education, family unification, and healthcare.
Messiah, we have to leave it there. What an honor to have worked with you here in your fellowship at Democracy Now!, filmmaker, host of the short documentary series Against All Odds. And thank you so much to Deanna Hoskins. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe, save lives, wear a mask.
Morning, Portland and the world, galaxy, universe, and all critters alive and, you know, hibernating. Why not? I'm Tammy. You're listening to The Gap. On the line with me is the darling Althea Billings. How are you doing, Althea? Hello.
Right. You know how it is.
Drinking your coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. I always feel like I'm like, oh, man, like, am I awake enough to do this? But then I hear the song and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that song definitely gets me in the a little voguing and stuff, and yeah, gets me in the mood. In the studio, we have the multi-talented Sonia. Hello, Sonia, and thank
Stop
you again for
it.
All your
You're
hard
embarrassing
work.
Me.
They all love it. They all love it. They actually—I don't even think of these compliments. They beforehand, they're like, "Hey, Tammy, you gotta call me this, and you gotta say that." So. Following the rules. And yeah, you're listening to The Gap, where we are minding it, we are bridging it, we are being attentive to it, because, you know, if you don't pay attention to the crevices, then you realize that a whole life form gets created at the bottom there. You know what I mean?
Tending to the gap.
Tending I find that garden. I trip a lot. Is I that just a, fall over.
I trip if I don't pay attention.
To the gap, you know?
We're, yeah. Give the weeds rigid. That's living, that's growing out of the crack a little fertilizer. Why not, you know?
Yeah, plants. It goes to show life finds a way.
Life does find a way, and that's how we found ourselves here, if you can believe that.
Oh, wow.
I was waiting for it to make a full circle.
No.
Okay, yeah, that's how we found our way over here. Get it, what's up? today's program is going to be a little different in the sense that longtime friends of the show would know that every once in a while we take to do what Althea dubbed Citizens Agenda, where we ask callers specific questions, or we have two specific questions. Althea, would you like to reveal what they are so that listeners can get it in their heads and have some answers for a little later on, or you want to just keep them on edge?
Well, yeah, no, let's start with the first one at the very least.
Okay, cool.
One of the things that we are thinking about right now, less than 100 days from the November election, we want to know, what is it that you want candidates to be talking about when they're competing for votes? And that's candidates at all levels, whether that's presidential, state level, local level. I was going to try to think of a joke if there was another kind of election that could be fun to talk about. I don't know, an online poll? I don't think that that's what I mean. But what do you want candidates to be talking about as they work to compete for votes? If you have thoughts about that, please give us a call. That's going to be 503-231-8187. And we would love to hear your thoughts about that.
That's right. And in the meanwhile, while everyone gets their coffee situated and everyone thinks of an answer to our part one question, we do have some stuff that we want to update y'all about, and just some updates and some highlights that we want to touch upon. And let's see, do we go straight to the 2020 watch, or is there anything else that we want to talk about before that segment?
I mean, I think the segment is just so good, so I think that we should do that now.
All right, so we have a little intro music for the segment. If you can, here's the 2021.
This is TikTok Watch 2020 with the GAP hosts, Althea Billing and Tammy Upteas.
This is TikTok Watch 2020 with your hosts, Althea Billing and Tammy Upteas. Today we'll be talking about the countdown to TikTok possibly being dismantled here in the U.S. of A. and by the way, every time I make a clock pun, an angel gets its wing. So that is why I'm just going to relentlessly keep doing it that way. So we heard that we got the final word from 45 that TikTok would have 45 days to disassemble itself, or to basically not be active in the USA anymore. And I think they had until, was it September 15th?
September 15th. Yeah,
to get their stuff together and basically exit. Now, there's a couple of reasons why this is unprecedented, and also kind of, I don't know, is it maybe reflective or kind of like a smoking gun, what we should be expecting when it comes to social media, the people, antitrust, just a myriad of things. Also, you know, call it by the name of a possible foreign government data mining. So there is a lot of discussion around it. I don't want to say controversy. There's a lot of discussion. And yeah, so last week we left off with Microsoft purchasing not for the administration for various reasons, from the organizing that people are doing online via the app that goes from shopping cart abandonment that creates issues for vendors this was specifically a I don't want to call it a cyber attack, but this was an organized execution of people coming together on the app and other apps as well, but mostly on TikTok, and going to the administration merch website and basically putting everything in the shopping cart and not checking it out. That's then in return that creates a whole slew of issues for the vendors and makes it seem like basically it was just another way of them kind of chipping away at the sanity of the people trying to maintain that website. There were a couple of other things that were political and also created direct action from different accounts. So there are different things, also at the Juneteenth celebration in which people signed up for a Trump rally and not a lot of people showed up. So there is a physical impact that is demonstrated from these, you know, organized or just like accounts that people are creating and sharing. So as a result of that and a couple of different things, and also let's not forget that there are the antitrust hearings that have started 2 weeks ago. So right in the midst of all that, now Trump is saying TikTok's got to go. So the countdown is on. And that's where we were last week. Althea, can you give us a little bit of an update of what's been happening since then?
Yeah, for sure. I just had one thought because you mentioned that it was that could be interpreted as like an omen or something. And it just made me think about how, you, like, even earlier this year, Trump has tried to limit the independence of American social media companies, of which there are many. And that, you know, this is, like, we could consider this to be substantially different because it is under the guise of it being a national security threat, which I say not because I don't believe that it could be, but I don't know hard evidence out there that it has been, or that maybe in a period of time previous it was, but now it's not. Anyway, but seeing that there is this way to get into TikTok, to needle at TikTok in a way that, you know, Twitter, for example, doesn't quite have that same pressure point because it's an American company that has
not
to
yet
abide by American laws. Hey, but yeah, I also wanted to mention one other thing, which is that TikTok has been a place for organizing. Like, it's gotten a lot of attention for young people organizing against Trump, but it's also been like a major like learning community and a place to connect and place for people to organize around different topics as well, because of its like high discoverability factor. But now, and this is right after we finished the show last week, I got a notification with the headline that TikTok was countersuing, and I was like, oh, we just finished telling everybody about that. But yeah, TikTok is countersuing over that executive order that says that they have to sell off all of their U.S. assets by the 15th or face consequences. Because it's kind of a wild thing to do. You would not be wrong to be a little miffed and to say, well, wait, what? Like, the U.S. government can just make a company do that. So one of the lawsuits against them is actually from TikTok employees who like crowdfunded their way to this lawsuit against the Trump administration, basically saying that the Trump administration, like, the executive order is overbroad and deprives like the American employees of the company from their right to be paid, which is kind of an interesting angle on it. But also, there's more companies in talks than just Microsoft in talks to try to get hands on TikTok, because, I mean, it is like a pretty major opportunity for companies in the U.S. because it has such incredible popularity.
Yeah, I mean,
Twitter is one of them, right?
Yeah, that is kind of Twitter, the companies that are like, yeah, we'll totally buy it, which is, you know, ByteDance, they are a way larger company than Twitter. And so retroactively, like, and this is from, if I'm understanding it right, then we have a situation where a small company like Twitter now is owned by a larger corporation like ByteDance, and then in turn we have, you know, the security threat is don't we have a foreign government kind of having majority stocks in an American social media platform? And isn't that like the whole point as to why it's being banned to begin with? It just because it would still have like that sticker, like that Twitter sticker that'll make it like okay or something. I don't quite understand how that would be allowed. But then again, I'm not a, what is it, like a corporation lawyer or something, but
right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you bring up a good point about why it might be suspected that the national security claim is a little bit disingenuous and is not entirely, you know, is not the only thing, not the only motivating factor or like a legitimate factor in trying to get this changed.
Yeah. I mean, isn't there... I just don't even understand what would stop them, anyone in the future, from saying that anything, you know, that is not monitored by, you know, CB is not, sorry, that's like Big Brother, not now, is not national security. The same can be said about Facebook. The same can be said about anything you want. I mean, if you really want to break it down, you could say that all phones are, you know, cause distractions, and they've been, I'm sure there's data somewhere, but, you know, there have been more car accidents because people text while they drive, which is illegal, and you should never, ever do that, they say is the law, but people still do it. So technically, couldn't they say, well, that is a greater national threat because it's killing more Americans? I mean, I'm sure there is some sort of statistic somewhere. I'll dig it up if I must. So can't that be, I mean, this is just kind of, you start this, you know, like I said, first they come for the foreign companies. I didn't say anything because I wasn't a foreign company. Then they came for the mom and pops. I didn't say anything because I was made to, you know, it's just, it's, and I'm not saying, like, I'm not, you know, saying, like, Twitter, TikTok, and all of these, like, they're huge conglomerates, and they're owned by people that don't have the best intention for the rest of us little folks, right? But the fact that it was the employees at TikTok that joined the lawsuit is really interesting, and I think that that's kind of like where I want to focus, is like us, not like, oh, poor TikTok. Is like you said, how are these employees going to be paid? Because that was the big thing, is that they possibly would not be able to get paid because, you know, of, you know, TikTok being banned. And then in their statement, you know, they said that they were shocked by the recent executive order, which was issued without any due process. And that's kind of like a huge part of...
That's what executive orders are, I should just say. due process of law would be Congress making a law about it, and really the extent of what the president's executive orders can entail has grown substantially over the past 50 years or so. And has been used, you know, when Congress won't take action on stuff, in the case of President Obama. But I mean, it means that as soon as the next president comes in, those executive orders can be like dropped immediately. But really what they mean is that this is an order that the president gives out, and the president has that for like all of his administration, all of the different like departments that are like in his cabinet. So that's what an executive order means.
Oh,
so saying there's like, I just, what I'm trying to say is I find that a little bit funny, because that's kind of what executive orders are, is that they're not due process, but it's a valid criticism.
But it's not, it without
kind
any
of
due
seems
process.
To come out of nowhere.
Well, if you kind of looking at it, and the fact that this was said, what, like a week after the antitrust hearing, which the dude from Twitter, he was just, I don't know how people can say nothing, like just, how are you just granted the, it's basically, it's like to just a person, like, you know, a regular schmegular gal, that it's like these folks can say and do anything, and when they're standing in front of their judge and juries, they can keep saying nothing and do nothing, and it's okay. Like, really? This is, I just don't understand how, you know, they were just standing there in front of the hearing and just like, yeah, well, semantic with things, people asking them yes or no questions and getting real semantic. Don't get me started about Mark Zuckerberg. I'm just working myself up just thinking about his responses. It's so disrespectful to the people. And that's really what it comes down to. Is you're doing all of this, and who is creating the content on all of this? It's the people. It's not you. Their staff, and there's the people that are on these apps, and it just, there's total, like, it is just disrespectful to all the people involved. And then you have, I don't know if, and then also, was it in the Times of India, they were reporting that I'm just so upset about this. It really just gets under my nerves, because as much as it seems like it's, oh, what, like a small little thing that's just kind of silly, it's not, and it's coming at a time where it's like, why are you doing this right now? Like, isn't there enough stuff that we need to focus on? Like, what is this that you're doing? Like, what's the end point of this? What's the point of this? And we'll see it. But they are in, so the company ByteDance, which is, you know, in China, is talking with Reliance Industries, which is based in India, about them buying the app. And it's you know, they don't have like the best of history. So, you know, that's also another possible contender in the buyout for the video based app TikTok. So that's all I've got. Just anger and disillusion.
That was TikTok Watch. Thanks for letting us talk about TikTok for 10 minutes.
And we'll be back next week to give you more updates. Do you think that Microsoft at all is going to even think about purchasing the app?
I mean, I think that they're going to try, because here's the thing. It's like, it's not like, you know, anybody's trying to twist their arm to make a bad investment. Like, it's a very successful app. But I don't know if Microsoft is gonna come out on top of it, I guess. Last week we talked about, right, the algorithm is really, I mean, it's obviously replicable, but in terms of like big scale social media companies, it's got a level of like you can discover things that you might not otherwise stumble upon in a really interesting and kind of unique way that other social media apps don't really have.
It's kind of sad to see other apps just replicate, just completely ripping it off and calling it by something else. And
IG Reels. You mentioned that last week.
And it just makes you, which came out the same day as the announcement.
Yeah.
Like,
coincidence? We talked about that already.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how is this, you know, and you know, we see it. We know we're saying the same thing. You know, and it's, you know, I think that itself goes back to the antitrust hearings, where it's how can you say that you aren't doing the things that you're being accused of when it's the proof is not even in the pudding. You're eating the proof. Proof is in the pudding. What's more proof in the pudding than proof in the pudding?
Stuck out like a sore thumb. Sonia, you got any good idioms for this?
No, I was just thinking about, I was just saying, like, what? What's more proof in the pudding than proof in the pudding?
You know, sometimes things are just perfect the way they are.
I mean, the adage is as it is because it works, you know?
Well, appreciate that. That was TikTok Watch 2020, and we'll be back next week with another take on it, and we'll see who will take on it. Maybe. Thank you. Exactly.
This has been TikTok Watch. Okay, we're having fun with the
So we're moving on. Citizens Agenda. Ophelia, would you like to take it away? Give a little intro into like the Citizens Agenda question and what it means, why we're even asking it.
Right. So Citizens Agenda is like a philosophy, I guess you could say, for covering presidential elections. And it's something that some news organizations will try to do in order to get from audience or communities that they're really interested in serving what is most important to them. And it's great because in asking those kinds of questions, it gives you like, hey, this is what our listeners, in KBOO's example, here's what our listeners think about, here's what our listeners are most concerned about this election season. Can you answer this question for them? And it gives you a little bit of leverage in that way, but it's interesting because you also, I mean, I think what a lot of people don't like election coverage. There's people who are like political junkies who absolutely live for that kind of the horse race coverage and what's happening and who's saying what and who tweeted what today and we're out on the campaign trail and stump speeches and all of that kind of lingo. But it can be a lot to take on, and it's hard to know what to care about, you know, like if I don't know. Do you remember like the Access Hollywood tape? I don't know. That to me sticks out as one thing of like, whoa, that no one was expecting that to happen, and it kind of like hijacked the campaign for a certain period of time. Or when James Comey was FBI director and said that Hillary Clinton was under investigation. Like, there's all of these different things that can come up that take away from issues. And I guess it would be wrong to say that all campaigns are like totally issue driven, because that's not really true. But it's good. I would argue that it is good for journalists to have a kind of grounding in what is it that our community cares about? What is it that our community is most concerned about in trying to make their choice? And how can we make sure that they get the information that they need? So KBOO will be, the news department will be putting out a survey sometime soon. But I do want to just pose the question now, if anyone feels like calling in and talking to us about it. What do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes, whether that's presidential candidates, state level candidates, local races, county races? What do you want them to be talking about?
Or even for the KBOO board, that's also an election that's happening for the members in
there
the KBOO community.
I was looking for
very good. It all comes back home.
What do you want people to be talking about? What do you think that they? What should candidates be saying? And if you would like to call in and share your thoughts, we would love to hear them. And that number is 503-231-8187. And we'd be glad to get to chatting with you.
That's true. I love the citizens' agenda idea that you're having, because it, especially, you know, when we were talking about the election, we realized we're not that far what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 12 hours. So, you know, because there's so many things happening, especially this year with the coronavirus, just all of the stuff that's happening. I think to reach out to the community instead of trying to, you know, figure it out, just reach out and say, hey, what's important to you? Let's see where your head's at, where the community head's at. So, you know, that's what KBOO is, you know? And, so like Althea said, if you're interested in the citizens' agenda, you can help us out by answering a couple of questions. The first one is that we're asking on air is, what do you want candidates to talk about during this election year? And that goes from federal to all the way from the top of the KBOO board all the way down to the presidential
election. And we know that's how you rank kind of the importance of all of these.
Of course. You can call 503-231-8187 to ask the citizens' agenda to answer the citizens' agenda question of what do you want candidates to talk about this year. As you all call in, I guess we have a caller in already. Norm, you on the line?
Yes, I am.
How's it going, Norm?
Hi.
It's going okay. Hi. I don't mean to dismiss any of the more pertinent up-to-the-minute issues that we have been engaged in, but I feel like the environmental crisis, which is truly globally existential, is not being addressed. I mean, you know, I love it when somebody, makes fun of Donald Trump on the campaign trail and stuff like that, calling him all kinds of names. But I'd like to hear a lot more about the environment.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate you saying that. It kind of brings me back to like the Youth Climate March in September, and when at that point we were really thinking that the environment and climate justice was going to be a major issue in the 2020 campaign, and just so many things have happened since then that it would be great to recenter that, especially because, you know, younger voters, newer voters, that's an issue that oftentimes appeals to them, and making sure they have the info that they can make their decision based on that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I think I'd like to piggyback on that and saying on
Monday on Locus Focus on KABU, there Barbara Bernstein was, I forgot who the interviewer, what the interviewee was, but they were discussing the effects of the environment on the environment from the tear gas and all the you know, from all the protesting that's been happening and all the chemicals that were sprayed into the air, into the soil, into the into the trees, into people's lungs that are living downtown and also protesting. And you know, afterwards, it's not like they had a chemical biohazard team clean it up. It was just city folks or city workers or even just cops just hosing it down. So you know, then boom, that's stormwater. What kind of effect is all that going to have? Not to, you know, the Willamette already has parts of it that's a Superfund. So like you said, in September it was huge. I know it was huge. You had Greta doing her not whistle train tour, but doing like her train tour thing. And there was a lot of
sailed the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, there you go. I'm writing that down. Thank you for that. That's a good one. We have another caller on the line. James, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
How's it going, James?
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
That's going all right. I guess one thing that I'd like to see the candidacy talking about, and maybe it's just a pipe dream considering, you know, maybe more on a local level that you hear about it, but not necessarily on a national level, but, you know, hearing about the real deep effects of white supremacy on the greater culture, and really understanding that it's not, because I still feel like people kind of get this idea that it's still, you know, it's just a bunch of, you know, white guys in robes walking around carrying torches, kind of like Charlottesville, where it's more of an overt thing, but, you know, that it's systematic, and that, you know, that it's you can't really externalize it, because even for people of color, we walk around with a lot of racist attitudes. And really being able to talk about that in an honest way that really informs people, I think that's something that's, because when you address it, it really addresses a lot of other problems, such as economic troubles and environmental issues, you know, like the whole issue of the Dakota Access Pipeline. You know, if they were trying to push it through an affluent white neighborhood, everybody would be up in arms, but because they're trying to do it on sovereign native land that for the most part has always been taken advantage of despite the treaties that have been made, that that most people don't even bat an eye about it, you know, or how people have been calling for police reform for over 100 years, because back in the day when my ancestors and, you know, my relatives were fighting the pecan sheller strikes and the lettuce strikes down in the Southwest, you know, they used police then to tear gas and break up the protests because they needed the cheap labor in order to maximize profits from the Mexican people. I mean, it's a whole thing. It's a whole system, and you know, it's more people. You know, people are looking at it in the age of Trump because Trump is probably the most. He's the most overt racist we've had in office since Woodrow Wilson, but I don't feel like people really get that it's systemic and that it's something that it's pervasive through every generation, and it's never really addressed in its correct light. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Thank you for bringing that up. You're very wise to point out the way that white supremacy is portrayed and kind of make that distinction between white supremacists and white nationalists. Like, white supremacy is like an ideology that is pervasive in all of these systems, like you mentioned. White nationalists, Proud Boys, the Charlottesville tiki torch wielding fellas, they're just subscribers specifically to that ideology. But it's very easy, I think, to create this kind of detached perspective of like that exists over there, and we did the civil rights movement already, so what else do you what do you want? And it comes down to like the de facto
and injury. I think one more thing, you know, is on the issue of police brutality. You know, like I was saying before, you know, and they've been calling for police reform at least 40 years before the civil rights movement. I think one of the most notable times is during what they deem the Zoot Suit riots, when really what it was a Red Scare, where they targeted Chicanos for refusing to conform, you know, and they went into our barrios and they pulled people out of theaters, burned their clothes, you know, and in the course of three days it went from just attacking, Pachucos who were too young to be drafted, all the way up to going into Filipino and Black neighborhoods and just pulling out people. I mean, it literally became this kind of white rage that really put, and you know, in the time of that riot, I don't even really like calling it a riot, but that's what history calls it, you know, during that that like massive like white beatdown, you know, the police sat by and really literally did nothing. And when they did do stuff, they ended up letting the sailors go for the most part. None of them were ever really convicted of anything. And you know, this is in the 1940s, you know, but I'm talking about as far back as the early 1900s. They've been calling for police reform for almost 100 years. And I don't know what type of long-term relationships anybody has been in where they've been asking for change for even 10 years from their partner. But if you continue to put up with an abusive relationship, I mean, there's no way to reform it except to, you know, there's no way to reform it except to end it. And I think that people really need to look at the relationship with policing and communities of color as an abusive relationship that has just been perpetuated by society. And at this point, if we've been calling for police reform for 100 years and nothing's really happened except maybe a gentler, maybe a taser with less electricity, you know, I mean, what other call is there except to abolish? You know, I mean, defund is a start, but, you know, like, you know, creating a system of accountability that doesn't bend to the will of the white majority.
Yeah, James, there's the effects of it is it ripples through our whole society, and to be able to look at it in, you know, not just listen to my lived experience because it's valid and it is, you know, it is, but stealing more sovereign land, or even how it affects the economy, kind of talking to people, and because, you know, we've been saying this is, you know, stop it, that we want a better way, you know, we've been doing it, but maybe hitting it and sort of, or coming at it with a different angle that maybe more like, I don't know, just serves to a different part of the brain, you know, that's just like, here are the numbers, here are the statistics, like you cannot argue with it. So thinking about it, like how it affects the economy, I think could speak to in a language that people might understand that otherwise wouldn't, and maybe don't even quite understand how something like white supremacy even differs from nationalism, or how it affects the populace. And I wanted to point out that, you know, all of the civil unrest, the protests that we've been seeing, it has opened the door and having more conversations about police unions and what they are and how they differ from other unions and what part they've had to play in the last, you know, let's say, you know, just picking a time, Rodney King, right? So like they can go enough for like where, how they've been held accountable, if at all, if they've been even holding the murderers accountable, and what role they play in this whole situation. And it's something that I've actually heard being mentioned on both sides of the aisle, which is like, to me, like kind of nuts, because it's like, we're getting somewhere. And I think that, you know, like you said, we've been saying, people have been wanting police reform for at least the last 100 years, at least. So to finally have like a common ground to start on that is kind of like, that is a solid foundation, I think, you know, we wouldn't have gotten there if it wasn't for all of the hard work that people have like done, you know, and rallied for and allied for and died for and lost their children for. So I have a feeling positive, at least about the conversation. But yeah, that's
something I would personally love to hear from our candidates, to hear about how, you know, how do you see this affecting us, like, not just in the pandering, just saying the right words, you know, what are you going to do, or how do you see this affecting, like, do you even see this affecting us, you know? So that's I'm actually very interested in that as well. Thank you so much, James.
I want to touch on something James mentioned, is the construction of the, I think he's talking about the pipeline that was routed through unceded mm-hmm. indigenous land, and rather than going anywhere near like where with the majority white population, and it actually, at least one of them, I think it was Keystone or DAPL, one of them actually was originally routed to go quite near a city with a majority white population, and that population rose up to no, we won't have this, it's dangerous, it's, and, you know, if anything goes wrong with it, we're all, it'll have a deleterious effect on public health here. And so it was rerouted to through where any massive failure would affect only indigenous people, and that was okay. And when they stood up and said, no, we don't want this, this is just too dangerous, you know, in came the feds and the sheriff and the state police, you know, with guns. So it's like people of color are literally forced at gunpoint to accept a risk that white people won't take.
Ooh, that was chilling. Yeah. I would love to hear candidates for any office just talk about it, and not just acknowledge it, just really, like, what are you going to do about it? Because at a certain point, just acknowledging things, I acknowledge that there has been unrest in this country. I acknowledge that there have been divisive tactics happening to our people. Okay, what you going to do about it? You acknowledge that,
right, when you
all day long.
When you say that, it feels like you're prepping and priming. I acknowledge, but, like, you're waiting for that other shoe to drop.
But it's Trump's fault. Okay, but what you going to do about it? Like, you know, so... These are fantastic questions. And Norm, yeah, the question about the environment, I've been thinking about that more and more as people have been talking about the effects of, you know, breathing in the gases, and it just stays in the air. You know, I've been, you know, even I'm in Northeast, and there, you know, hasn't been any tear gassing here, you know, yet, thank God. But I, you know, even just being outside, I'm like, ooh, there's a gust of wind. You never know. You might get a little whiff, and, you know, these things have long-term effects, and they vary from, like, rashes to, like, serious harm to your insides. And
yeah, there was that whole study about the hormonal effects, and that it was, like, inducing menstruation in people
inducing
when it wasn't, like...
Oh, my
God. Did you not
God.
Hear that? I mean, they haven't done a wide enough study. Part of the reason that I believe tear gas was banned in either Chile or Argentina, like, around the world where it's banned, is, like, that there was evidence that it was causing miscarriages in pregnant people. So, I mean, they haven't done, like, how could they do a study to know for sure that that's what's going to happen? But there's, like, evidence to suggest, and a lot of anecdotal evidence from Portland protests that has induced menstruation in people.
Geez. Well, on that note, I don't even know. I'm clean segue. I that's not good. And so what is it?
Yeah,
what
no,
effect
sorry.
Does it have on us, you know, on the air, on the animals? Oh my goodness. On the cats in the neighborhood. That's it.
Right, and that like evidence is only from people who've, you know, taken notice and told somebody about it, right? Like, what level of, you know, bodily harm or you know, bodily change is not going reported or noticed?
Well, we saw.
We may not know.
We've seen health effects of lead in various places, particularly in Flint, which still doesn't have a proper water system. You know, years on, it still hasn't been addressed. And we already know about hexavalent chromium with the cancer clusters around the plant that produced a whole bunch of it. Or was used for some manufacturing process of which hexavalent chromium was a byproduct. The whole Erin Brockovich's thing was all about, the illness and sickness in her community from hexavalent chromium leaking into the water table. And the tear gas they've been using downtown has both. Has lead salts and hexavalent chromium. So we already know that this stuff is horribly toxic, and PPB and the federal goons that weren't any particular federal agencies. They were a private mercenary army hired by DHS to brutalize, to poison us. We know this. And so, hey, piggybacking on James' question for the candidates, we know this. You know it. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And don't just acknowledge it. What are you going to do about it?
Right, because that's what we've seen from PVB and from Wheeler when it's been brought up, and it has been brought up a lot, is, okay, we acknowledge that tear gas isn't great, but we have to be able to disperse these crowds somehow, and we don't want to shoot you. It's like, okay, great, thanks for not wanting to shoot us with guns.
What if they met the people's demands, and so there wouldn't be any reason for them to be gathering?
Interesting point, Sonia. You know what? Let's get Wheeler on the line. Maybe he hasn't thought of that.
Well, I mean, Teresa Rafer was on, and they had some... I would love to hear someone like that moderate a question, a Q&A, because I think they'll get down to that Q&A, if you know what I mean. So
get the A from the Q, if you will.
I mention them often, but don't report like PDX. They're the ones spearheading the lawsuit they're the one who got the city to stop using gases for at least a week at the beginning of the protests, and then they were the ones behind the lawsuits. Like,
they've been following up, and I wanted to mention one other thing on tear gas, then I want to pivot, right? People have been collecting the canisters and seeing that not only it's not just tear gas, it's expired tear gas, like tear gas that was supposed to be like, don't use this anymore after 2008. That's 12-year-old tear gas. That's 12-year-old chemical it's not optimal for use when it's like in your sell-by date. And just to think of the sheer amount of like expired gas that the phrase expired gas is funny to me, but the actual impact is horrifying.
I don't think it's like dried seasoning where it's like, oh yeah, it's just less flavorful. I think that turns into a whole new substance, or maybe not. I'm not a scientist, but if you we'd love to hear your question. And maybe if you have an answer about what happens to tear gas once it's expired, you can call 503-231-8187. You're listening to The Gap here on KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy, and Sophia, and in the studio is Sonia. We're doing a citizens' agenda, I guess, call-in session, and we were asking folks what would they like candidates to talk about this upcoming election season. And it's going to start from the tip of the cable board, and even trickle all the way down to the executive, to the presidential candidate, election. So we'd love to hear your questions, and we do it in the last 10 or so, 12 minutes that we have left. We actually have another question that we'd like to ask, so you can pick, out of two. And this question is, what will you remember about the last 6 months? So that's a handful.
it's a hard one to answer. But what will we remember from the last 6 months? And you can call us in 503-231-8187. Does that question make sense to you, Althea, or is it, should I elaborate a little, or do you want to elaborate?
Well, I mean, I think your answer could be really any number of things. There's been a lot of, I don't know, fun pop culture moments, a lot of life change that has happened. I spend so much time at my house. I would remember that for sure. But whatever comes to mind, I've been trying to think about, what am I going to, like, tell somebody who wasn't here for this? Like, what would I remember? What do I want to make sure I remember to tell people about it?
Like, in the future, when they're like...
In the future.
Hey, hello, Dr. Billy. Would you tell us about...
What was it like?
Oh,
and I'll
be
in my rocking chair, my electronic rocking chair, and I'll say, well, great question. Do you guys have you ever heard of a little documentary series called Tiger King?
Yes, I think Tiger King might have to. We were all watching Tiger King, and somehow we all got sick or something. I can't really remember.
We were all really down with this guy who definitely did an animal abuse for like 2 weeks, and then we were like, wait, this is really messed up. I guess, forget it.
I'd like to start from the last. I remember the there's just so much. I remember the sunshine because I would take a lot of walks, mm-hmm. and so I just remember the sunshine and and the rest is like kind of blank. I guess
going on
walks,
exploring my neighborhood.
I think like the one thing that like. I guess from like the last 6 months, you know, specifically, is that there's this one image, and I think it's over the Express Side Bridge, I think. And there's all these people that are like laid down from the beginning of the protest. I think it was like the first or second day. And it's just like, it looks, I don't know, to me, it looks like there are millions of people there. And they're all just like laying down on this bridge, and it looked so powerful. And like, I just like seeing that, I was so confused and also so like moved at the same time. And I couldn't believe that people were doing this. But for me, you know, like, not like for me technically, but like for my rights. Or my existence, you know, like seeing all these people saying Black Lives Matter was kind of I don't know, it was I'll never forget seeing so many people, you know, especially in downtown after the property damage was done, and people just said things like, I just know this is going to be worth it, this better be worth it, because we are, you know, this doesn't matter, I'm insured, so let's hope something comes of it. And it just felt like such a low and high moment at the same time. So it's probably what I would remember. That and like TikTok dances. That's about it. How about you? Ophia?
I mean, I think like it's weird, I guess, to sort of like theorize about the past couple months because it feels like we haven't seen the full impact yet, but, you know, having been through other shorter-lived uprisings, I think it's really interesting to see the conversation pivot and see what, like, actually see the results of what enough pressure can do, which isn't to say that, like, everything that needs to be done has been achieved, because obviously not, but seeing people who have not previously been engaged with the topic matter of racial justice or police brutality get engaged, get involved, and realize that they have a role to play, and not kind of get bogged down. And I feel like the same conversation that's been had for like over 10 years, at least in my memory, about that you have to do peaceful protest, and that, well, we did body cameras, isn't that enough for you? I think that's a really cool moment to live through, and one that I hope we can replicate over and over again.
Yeah, well, and won't be with the mask because we don't need them anymore, because we'll have a vaccine and everyone will be hunky-dory, but yeah.
That's
also masks. Just masks.
Mask fashion. The thing that my dad always says about it is he'll say, like, oh, you know, like, going into the store with a hat and a mask and glasses on, if you did that, like, 6 months ago, you would have been thrown out. But now it's like, you can't get in if you don't do that. Like, good point, Dad.
I'd like
Funny
to
know how things change.
Yeah, well, we're gonna be doing that too. In my back last year, Sonia, I'd like to throw that question to you if you'd like to answer it, about what you remember about the last 6 months in the future. Well then, that's how. Nice.
Good
all
point.
Right. Bang. No, yeah, sounds good. Yeah. So that has been. Sonia, you have anything you'd like to add about what you would remember about the last 6 months?
Okay, well, I think.
Oh, there you go.
I think I would most remember my deep admiration and gratitude for the people who keep coming out, who keep showing up in the streets. As I remember when I was in the streets over and over again, and this time around I've realized that there are many ways in which police custody would be dangerous, even, you know, life-threatening for me. And and how I'm particularly vulnerable to several factors. And so there are things that are keeping me off the streets in this round. And so I'm particularly grateful to everyone who is able to take those risks and is willing to take those risks and has been taking all those risks. And some folks have been fortunate, some are less so, and big ups and huge shout outs and thank yous to all of them.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, we've had folks at the protests, and they, you know, call in and do their live reporting. You know, Leslie, Corey, people in the newsroom, you know, Jenka, Jenna, just so many people, you know, and cable people and outside of cable people, and people sending in stuff, and just yeah, it's been I know when I first came to Portland, someone said, oh yeah, it's a community over competition, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, but I'm definitely seeing that now. Oh yeah, I'm definitely seeing that now. And I mean this has been, what is it, day 78?
I think so. 78? 77,
yeah.
Or
78. It's not easy. So, oh, and of course, Michael Leverett, who's you know, been, you know, making sure that when people, you know, do reach out, there's the proper narrative, and it's been a humbling experience, most definitely. I agree with you there. And I guess we have a couple of moments left. I don't know if we have any people calling in.
Not at the moment. Not, that is totally but, cool. You know, we got like 2 minutes.
We got 2 minutes left. Do you have any words you'd like to share before we wrap it up for the weekend?
Oh, yeah, the weekend.
Yeah, it's a weekend.
It's funny. I mean, this is like obviously lighter fare in terms of what I'll remember, but just how sort of detached I've become from the concept of time.
Oh, gosh.
You know, time passing, what is the weekend? You know, I don't know.
We're all in like Yoda status where that, where like time is not a thing. We're a bunch of acid heads, like, when is time? It is not real.
tomorrow.
Well, because you say the weekend, and I have, like, an instinctual reaction of, like, oh, yeah, great, the weekend. But then I'm like, wait, what does the weekend even mean? Guess I get to go grocery shopping. My big outing. You got to show up and show out to the grocery store now. I don't get to see that many people all the time.
That there is something to be said. Maybe that could be a subject for next week about the places where you get to, you know, dress to impress. I mean, Freddie Myers has been my place dress to impress. Tell you what. not that anyone, like, says anything ever, right? But it's just...
No.
I know.
We all avoid each other quite literally.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw an Instagram or Tumblr thing. It was... Well, I saw a screen cap of it on Facebook because I'm not on either of those others. It said, we need to retire the phrase, avoid it like the plague, because it turns out people don't do that.
Avoid it like the plague? You mean get up in your face and spit in it? Sure.
You mean start licking door handles?
Yeah. let's not forget that did happen. That did happen.
Oh, really? Anyway. I was just making that up. Dang.
No, it did happen.
No, you weren't.
Oh, boy.
I am Tammy. On the line is Althea. In the studio is Sonia, and we're wrapping it up. This has been The Gap. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week. Thank you so much.
Thanks, all. Thanks, Sonia.
KABU is holding a training this Saturday, August 15th, for KABU volunteers interested in covering protests in our city for the KABU Evening News. The training will be virtual as the station remains closed due to the ongoing